Welcome to the Supported Living Property Podcast with your host, me, Lisa Brown, the place to learn about supported living property investing. In this episode, Chris Wilde talks about the children's care system and his concerns for the currently unregulated support provision for young people in care who are 16 years and older. He describes the current care review and gives his thoughts on what needs to change. He talks about the importance of property for young people who have been in care and describes the impact the right property can have. Hi, Chris. It's great to have you here today. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. And thank you for having me.
No, it's great to have you here. Do you want to introduce yourself, Chris, and tell people a little bit about you, please?
Absolutely. Yeah. My name is Chris Wilde. I'm a campaigner for young people in the care sector. I'm an author of two books, Damaged and The State of It.
Brilliant. And The State of It is your most recent book, isn't it, that's just come out?
It is, yeah. It was published last month, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So do you want to talk a little bit about your background and why you've come to this position?
Yeah, absolutely. I was brought up in the care sector. My dad died when I was 11 years old. So before my dad died, I had a very kind of normal upbringing, whatever that is. You know, we lived on a normal street. We did normal things. We went on holiday. Mom, dad, sister, and then my dad died. Then overnight, obviously, the blue skies of my happy youth turned an ominous dark grey. And what I mean by that is it's kind of like one minute you're in a colourful kind of life, colourful world, and it's like that transition into a black and white movie where my dad was the kind of core of the family, held it all together. He died suddenly with chickenpox, very quick, within 2 weeks. He didn't have an immune system, so for him, getting chickenpox would be like anybody today just getting a really vicious, attack of cancer. And you know, it destroyed my life, as it would. You know, it was really it was a traumatizing time for me. I gravitated towards other fragmented children at the time in Halifax. I became known to local authorities quite quickly for being, I wouldn't say a troublemaker, but being more of a nuisance, you know, a burden. I was breaking windows. I was just doing anything to get attention, if I'm honest with you. Mm-hmm. I was in juvenile court twice a week and I was sent into a care home. The care home I was sent to was Skirkit Lodge in Halifax, which was, it wasn't a good care home. It was run by paedophiles. It was very dangerous. I was one of the lucky ones. I managed to escape unharmed. Well, you know, I say that I wasn't severely sexually abused like a lot of young people were for 30 years. And that's kind of the basis, my foundations of why I wanted to get back into the care sector as a professional and help other young people like myself. And it's become my passion. I've become an advocate for this. I've been very, very lucky to be able to write about my experiences and help thousands of people over the country. I've been very lucky to consult government and join the care review and really make a difference to the care review, care sector going forward and give young people the chance to live a good life.
And that personal experience really adds weight to your voice, doesn't it, Chris? It means that, you know, when you're speaking about stuff, you've got the personal experience, but also your professional experience. And that combined, I think, makes your message very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. When I sit at the table, you know, I have lived experience and I also have experience as a professional. So I've seen both sides of the spectrum. So, you know, my arguments, they're justified, you know, they have meaning to it because, you know, it's not like I've come into this with a biased opinion. Is I've lived through the care sector. I've then gone back into it. I've made comparisons to my own personal experience and seen that, yes, the world has evolved, it's changed, but the care sector hasn't. And that's where my input comes in. And that's where it's valuable to say, well, something needs to be done here. We can't continue like this.
So for people who don't have any understanding of the situation, can you just explain a little bit about what your concerns are currently and what the issues are that people should be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to simplify it, it's basically the care sector for young people, especially young people from 16 up until 25 years old, is unregulated. So when I say unregulated, that means it's not legally protected by a regulator like Ofsted. So it means that these young people can be placed in horrific conditions. They can live in houses that are very dangerous, houses that local authorities put out for tender without inspecting doing any assessments, because they're inundated with so many young people, and social work has now become an office job. It's not where you're on the ground anymore. So they don't have time to inspect these properties. And it's like a sales job. They've got so many young people they need to house. And then, you know, the other alternative is, but these young people end up homeless. But the kind of ramifications of that is, but these young people end up living in a property where they're groomed into county lines, sexual exploitation, because the support doesn't exist. And they're just left in the dark, they're neglected, they're abandoned. And that's, for me, is a void area of the care sector. And that's something where if we don't put an end to it now, if we don't stop it, we're going to see so many more young people homeless. We're going to see so many young people committing suicide. It's going to be a catastrophe.
I think, you know, there's this kind of perception that the children's services are really quite regulated, aren't they, up to 16. There's a lot of regulation around the support, about the level of and quality of the accommodation, but also of the support staff with the people, with, you know, supporting young people.
Yeah.
But once people hit 16, that changes. It's like a complete cliff edge, isn't it, Chris?
And the laws around that, they're very much segregated in that. Anybody who's been in the care sector over 14 for 3 months and under 16 for 3 months can guarantee care up until 25. Now, I don't know who sits down and kind of says that's how it's going to be, but it just doesn't work. So a lot of young people come into care at 16. They'll get support for 2 years, then they go into housing projects, housing associations, but a lot of them fall off the radar and they end up homeless, because a lot of young people, you know, they go to properties, you wouldn't want a dog living in these properties. So, you know, they feel safer on the street. And that's where we've got to in 2021, where a 16, 17 year old, young, vulnerable person with complexities, with mental health issues, or just emotional problems, would rather live on the strand than live in a house. Now that for me is a huge, huge problem. It's and that for me is inhumane. And that's something our government needs to be responsible for.
It's, I mean, and anyone who hasn't had a lot of accommodation, you know, time with teenagers, you know, I've got two teenage lads.
Yeah.
My oldest one is about to be 16. There's no way he's independent. There's no way that he, you know, that he has the skills. He's, you know, he's great, but he, you know, you're not a finished product at 16, are you? You know, you need that support really until your early 20s. You know, you need that support. So it's an ongoing need.
Of course,
isn't it?
And It's all about the lexicon as well, as, you know, the terminology, where if you're in a care sector at 16, you're classified as a young adult. If you're at home with mom and dad and going to college, you're a child. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, at 16, you're still, like you said, you're underdeveloped. You're not ready for independent lifestyle. Mm. You're still trying to come to terms with your hormones and everything else. And, you know, this transition into adulthood, it takes a long time. It doesn't happen overnight. And it definitely doesn't happen when you're 16, 17 years old.
No, definitely not. Now, there is some stuff going on around this at the moment, isn't there, with the independent care review? Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Chris?
Yeah, I'm in the care review, so I'm on the experts by experience board. So it's the first time they've ever done anything like this, where they've got a group of people with lived experience who advise public servants on, you know, we give our feedback on how things should be. We look at evidence, we look at what's going on in the world, what's going on in the country, more to say is about, you know, why so many young people are falling off the radar, looking at solutions, what could be done. And that's what the review is doing at the moment. It's going to try, you know, we want to be optimistic and call it a review of solutions. We can get all the evidence, we can come up with all the solutions, but at the end of the review, when the review comes to fruition in March, we've got to present that to government. Now, if that case for change is strong enough, yes, we will have the power to overturn certain legislations which, you know, don't at the moment protect young people. If we don't, then unfortunately, we're going to continue seeing young people in these precarious situations and neglected. And that's what the review is all about. It's about highlighting the dangers and the mass negligence of suffering what these young people go through in the care sector in 2021.
And so the report's due to it's going to report in March to government.
Yeah, there's three stages to the care review. There's the case for change, when that's basically just discussing what needs to change. And then there's going to be a case for solutions. That's coming up with solutions. What are we going to do about all these problems? And then the last And the final review will look at when this is going to happen, how it's going to happen, and costings and stuff like that. And it'll get more into politics. So there's three stages. So we've completed stage one. So that's the case for change. Now we're going into stage two, which is what we're going to do. We need to find solutions.
Do you have any idea about where that's going to go, Chris, or is it still too early for that?
It's still too early. We're collating information. We've got an evidence team. We've got Josh McAllister and his public servants who are traveling the country speaking to local authorities. It hasn't been great at the moment because a lot of local authorities and organisations are not opening the doors or getting involved because I think people are very nervous about the review. They don't want to be exposed to being, you know, a part of that negligence. They don't want to be exposed to, you know, there's such a dichotomy within local authorities. How every local authority do things different. They don't want the review delving into that. And obviously someone's head has to roll at the end of it. And I'm sure a lot of heads of departments don't want it to be theirs. I'm trying to be optimistic. I'm trying to be confident about this. We have a voice, we have a powerful, powerful voice, but I feel that, you know, we need more of a revolution. I'd like to see young people fighting for this as well, but they're just not at the moment. I'd like to see them marching in London and saying, look, we want a future. We deserve to live a good life. And unfortunately, we're not getting that at the moment. And that's just, for me, where the review falls flat.
Because there's not enough of the children's voice and the young people's voice within
it. Yeah, and a lot of young people, you know, they're still scared to speak up and speak out. You know, a lot of young people, they've suffered so much of abandonment and just being thrown in the corner like a broken toy. And then all of a sudden we've got this review and we want to get everybody excited and we want to get everybody involved. But I think people just feel deflated. They don't feel, but the government's going to do anything about it. So they feel, you know, a lot of young people I speak to say, well, it's a waste of time, Chris. I mean, you know, we don't have a magic wand to fix this. And that's disappointing. And that's sad to hear. And it's
really
people
sad.
Like me. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And that's, you know, where I feel where I'm more valuable to try and galvanize these people and say, look, we've got to do this as a unity. And I do want to believe we can make a change.
And I guess the thing is that even although this is going on, you know, that's not going to report till March and then there's going to have to be time for things to happen. At the crux of it are still young people who are not being treated in the way that they should be. And that's going to, you know, and the best will in the world, it's going to be 18 months, 2 years till sort of change happens, I guess, with the timescales you're talking about.
Well, you know what? I'm not even thinking that. I'm thinking it's not even going to be for 10 years. You know yourself, you give a document to government. You know, I think they have something like 2 or 3 years to respond.
Right.
And even then, what's going to happen is, which always happens in this country, there'll be a new government. When that new government comes in, then they've got to go through that document and they've got to go through it in 2 or 3 years. And that's just why, you know, it's vacillating responsibility and accountability. And that's why we're in this mess, is because every time we feel like we're getting to the precipice of some kind of change, we have a change in government or a change in leadership. You know, Boris Johnson doesn't really value young people in the care sector. You know, we're talking about a prime minister who talked to, you know, about historic sexual abuse, spending money, investigating. It's like spoffing money up the wall. That's why we don't have any change in this country. That's why young people are still being abandoned, living in dangerous houses. They're still being abused. It's, again, you know, I'm not being pessimistic. I'm trying to stay confident about this. And I do want this change more than anything. But I feel even though we've got such a powerful and strong team on the care review, we are just puppets on a string. Mm. We don't have the powers at the end of the day.
No. What needs to change, Chris? If you were suddenly given a magic wand and could sort things out, what would you do? How would you change things?
I'd create a care sector to be proud of. You know, I have to parallel my thinking to the education system, how we do have some great schools. Our health system, regardless what people say about the NHS, it is an absolutely amazing thing we have. And I don't see why the care sector can't parallel that, why we can't, you know, merge all those three together and be responsible for the development of all three. I'd want to see care homes. You know, I was speaking to someone recently and I said, can you imagine if it was like Hogwarts, where young people went into care and they had the best support, they had the best teachers, they had the best outcomes, but they just don't. And it's still a very much a Dickensian attitude where, you know, young people and who are in the care sector, you know, at the lowest, they're the scum, you know, they're broken, they're worthless. And unless we change that attitude and we change that thinking, I don't think we'll see change. And that change will come once, like, young people now, they get into politics, they start fighting for the cause, but that's going to take time. You know, mm-hmm. we've got to try and eradicate that segregated mentality of you know, bureaucracy who don't value anybody, you know, below their status. And until we do that, then we are always going to be, you know, the segregated group of people, which, you know, not worth spending money on, unfortunately.
So it's a societal change about our perception about young people and children in care.
Of course, it's systemic. You know, it's a poison attitude, which, you know, there is still that huge dichotomy in this country where if you're rich, you're privileged. If you're poor, you're not. That's it. Mm. There's no middle. And if you're in the care sector, you're below that poor status. You don't even make the radar. Mm.
So it's giving the people a voice and trying to get people heard. Obviously, you know, we talk a lot about our property in this, and obviously that's, yeah. you know, and I guess one of the things we need to be thinking about is the quality of the properties that some of these providers are leasing and what we can do about that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working with a company at the moment called the Christian Action Housing Association based in Enfield. So they provide quality support for young people. So young people who are homeless, young people who have left the care sector. And they provide them with supported accommodation. So they have some buildings, like they have a dispersed unit. So that dispersed unit will be properties around Enfield, which has minimal support. And then you have properties like foyer properties where they're self-contained flats with 24-hour support. Now, what happens is these young people come into the housing association for 2 years, and then they'll start bidding for independence. Now, this is where the problems begin. When you're bidding, especially in Enfield, you know, you're bidding, you know, against a system that just doesn't have enough properties. You know, if we have 60 young people in leaving care, only two of them will get the opportunity to bid for a property. What happens to them other 58 people? Then that's when we need to go to private landlords. That's when we need to go to, you know, housing associations and say, look, do you have any rooms or anything for these young people? And a lot of them just won't do it because A, they see them as problematic people. B, they don't want young people who are on universal credit, who can't guarantee rent. They want to save these properties for people who've got money, who are going to pay, who've got jobs. And that's why we've got so many young people who are homeless or, you know, get sent to live in Birmingham and out of London. And then that has problems of its own. Housing is a huge problem for young people who come through the system. And if they do get a house, it'll be a shared accommodation with strangers. It won't be looked after. Landlords will be charging ridiculous amounts of money. And what that does then, that prevents that young person from going to a university because they've got to get two or three jobs just to pay rent, pay council tax, survive. It really is a bias system. And it's something we really do need to look at. You know, I'd like to see more properties built specifically for young people coming out of the care sector. I'd like to see more landlords getting involved in these programs. I want to see landlords come to visit these young people I work with to show them, but they're entrepreneurial, they're talented, they're creative. All they need is an opportunity. Mm. If you give them a nice place to live, they'll respond to that place. They'll keep it clean. They'll look after it. They'll respect it more than anyone else because they know about resilience. They know about hardship. They know about struggle. And I've seen the difference when we've managed to get a young person. We managed to put a young person into a nice property. And I've seen how that young person flourishes.
Yeah,
I've seen how that young person manages to get themselves into a good job or, you know, manages to get themselves into a relationship, a healthy one. Mm. So property has a huge, huge impact on the well-being of young people.
It's so important. It all starts with property and a good home, doesn't it?
Of course it does. And that's what these people yearn for. Mm. They've never had a good home. So when they do actually get one, it's like a castle to them, even if it's just a one-bedroom flat. I've moved young people into one-bedroom flats, and I've seen the smile expand on their face. And I visited them 3 months later and thought, wow, this flat is immaculate. And look how different your life is. You're radiant. You're glowing. And that's what we've got to try and convince landlords, you know. We've got to try and convince local authorities and people involved in housing associations that we're not broken toys, we're not scum, we're not criminals. Just want opportunities, that's it. Of an opportunity to live a decent and good life.
Chris, thank you. That's been brilliant. Thank you. It's been really good talking to you today. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.